the OTB Podcast Network.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now you're welcome along. Six Nations finale, of course, in Paris. We have France against Scotland. France needing a 21 points or more victory to win the 2021 championship. Then on Saturday at the RDS Pro 14 final, this is Leinster against Munster. The big question being what strength of teams we will see. And then confirmation as well, the Lions tour goes ahead in South Africa. Former Irish international Niamh Briggs is with us evening. Niamh, great to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. First, before all that, a few takeaways from Ireland 32, England 18. You have dissected the Irish attack for us over the past few weeks. To call Sunday, or Saturday rather, a marked improvement, I think would be an understatement. Best performance of the Farrell era, best Irish performance since 2018, full stop.
Yeah, 100%. I thought, to be fair, I started to see signs of it against Italy. I thought and big patches of it in the next game against Scotland. I thought, but they really put together their probably best collective performance under Andy Farrell last weekend. I thought they were brilliant. I thought their ability to move to point of attack was something that we were craving for a long time. The ability for other players to step in and take pressure off Johnny Sexton freed up Johnny to have one of his best games in an Irish shirt in a long time. And it was brilliant to watch. And you know, you'd be delighted for them, obviously, the whole emotion behind it all with CJ and that, and but their ability to put a performance in like that, I'd say part of them are a little bit sorry that, you know, it was a save the best for last. I think it'd have been nice to have seen if they could have, you know, showed that consistency again the following week. But to be fair to them, they got better and better as the tournament went on.
And on that theme, is your sense that what we saw on Saturday is a repeatable level of performance from this group?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Johnny spoke really well in the press conference afterwards, where he said that's their bar now, and that's got to be their minimum. I thought they seem to find a way that suits them to play. I think for a long time they might have been trying to play a certain way that didn't suit them as players. I think, you know, they really showed an intent. You know, it was just all basics. And that's probably been the most, I'd say that's for them, it would be the most frustrating part. It wasn't anything magical that they pulled out of the hat. They all attacked square, they attacked the pace, and they looked to move the ball away from England's big heavy power forwards, and they got so much change out of it, and the decision making was right. And I just think, you know, they're basics that can be done every week. They don't take anything special, and I loved that even after the game Johnny was, you know, driving those standards and saying, that's it now, that's our bar, that's got to be our minimum when we come out again. So, but like, rugby's really emotive, and it's mad to think that such game can, you know, hinge on the balance of, you know, where you are mentally as a group and as an individual. Obviously, you know, the announcement of CJ leaving, you know, brought them to another level emotionally. I think if you can get to that pitch or near enough to that pitch, we have the players then to be able to compete against the best in the world, I believe. So it's just whether you can get to that emotive pitch. I think Scotland showed that they could do it in the first game, but then weren't able to repeat that. And so I think that's going to be the big question mark for them. Like, does it have to take a player announcing retirement that they all get on with to get to that? You know, that shouldn't really be the case.
No, that's the really interesting question. You also said something else, Niamh, which you might develop for us or expand upon. You said other players taking responsibility took pressure off Sexton, which allowed him to have maybe his best game in a very long time. So what do you mean? Do you mean at first receiver in particular, or other stuff going on as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I thought, you know, I was getting giddy when, you know, saw Keith Earls jump in there into the first receiver a couple of times. But also you could see them pointing to the space. That's a huge thing. So basically Johnny's looking after the nine, he's looking after the group of forwards that are around him, and then you can see other people taking control outside of that. You know, I played a season with 10 with Ireland, and that's what you want. You want people outside of that because they're the ones that can see the space. So they're the ones that can actually say, yeah, look, just shift it to us as quickly as possible because we have space here. As opposed to, and maybe Johnny likes the fact that he likes to control every phase. I don't know. So, but there were first couple of games, it was just very, you know, slow, ponderous, and it was almost like they were all looking at him to choose something. Whereas I thought the last couple of games, and obviously especially last weekend, they were, other players were taking the onus upon themselves to say, listen, you know, and it wasn't just the backs, it was the forwards, it was Tadhg Furlong, Tadhg Byrne, Ian Henderson was unbelievable, picking lines that, you know, we know he can do, but we hadn't seen too much of. But that's just momentum and confidence, you know. I thought, for me, the best part of that game was the first 10 or 15 minutes when Ireland scrambled so well, they were under huge amounts of pressure and managed to get themselves out of that. If you can get yourself out of that as a team, the lift is unbelievable, and you then feel, oh, well, if we've held them for there, then, you know, we can go on and kick on from this now. It's in our hands. I think had Ireland conceded a try in that first 10 minutes, it would have been a really big, probably a different picture. You know, they're under the posts, they're trying to fix things, whereas they managed to hold out and allowed England that purple patch and yet still didn't concede a try. I think that that would have given them a huge lift.
Who's your Irish player of the championship?
Oh God, that's really difficult. Probably Robbie Henshaw. I think he's been outstanding. I thought he set the tone for so many of the games, and the rest of people just, you know, jumped on it. And sometimes you just need one player to take the game by the scruff of the neck. And it wasn't just the other day too. I thought he was excellent across the five games. But look, we've had so many really good players come into form. I thought Tadhg Byrne was excellent. I thought Will Connors was unbelievable for the games that he played. And you know, Johnny was brilliant for the last two games. Like, he really was. Since he missed that French game, he came back in, and I thought he was excellent the way he led. But yeah, I suppose Robbie Henshaw, you know, probably deserves all the plaudits he can get. He's probably playing the form of his life, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess the great thing is you could say that about a few players, couldn't you? I mean, Tadhg Byrne has, I mean, this is his arrival. I mean, he's now almost undroppable. And you mentioned Henderson taking those lines. I mean, there was one off Murray in the build-up to the try that wasn't, which was just fantastic. And Tadhg Furlong underlines how much you miss Furlong. And you could kind of go on, which is a great thing, that you're seeing individuals having great games. Now, we should touch on England, because we didn't so much on Monday, because I guess we were also focused on what went right for Ireland. But for England now, this is a dreadful championship. Bar the French game, really, Niamh, it hasn't been good. There's something not right there. I saw the RFU chief executive, Bill Sweeney, come out and said they're going to have a review in April. And he said, we need to lift the hood up. We need to look in there and say, are we headed in the right direction? It's important to stress, he said, that Eddie's not in denial. He's not quoting his win ratios or his previous tournaments or his record up to now. He knows it's going to be a thorough and brutally honest debrief. We need to get the facts and then we'll make changes. You can't just do nothing and we won't do nothing. At the same time, it's important we don't overreact. I mean, that doesn't sound like a fun meeting.
No, it doesn't, to be fair. And look, you know as well as I do, it's a results-driven business, and you'd have thought at the back of your head that probably Eddie had enough credit in the bank, being Six Nations champions, World Cup finalists. But for me, the anomaly of this tournament was that French performance, because for the other performances and the other games, they were really, really off the mark. And you know, I spoke earlier on about that emotive, probably buy-in. I didn't really see that at any stage from the English players. I thought, you know, the player selection will definitely have to come into it. There, you know, when you look at, like, I Robbie Nutt, so I watch all the Premiership games every weekend, and you see the players that aren't selected to play for England, and you're thinking, England must be unbelievable. And then, you know, they turn up and they're not. They couldn't be further from that. And it's a funny thing, you know. They had obviously a big disruption to start with the COVID thing and not being able to, you know, their coaches not being available to train for the first couple of weeks. And then the lack of game time for those Saracens players, because they're his drivers. They're the ones that are him on the pitch. They're, you know, that core group of Saracens players are basically his mini-me's, and they're the ones that have always bought into what he was trying to do. I think I feel really sorry for some of his players, the likes of Ollie Lawrence, who gets his first cap, touches the ball once, gets his second cap and touches the ball twice. Anthony Watson didn't touch the ball until the 70-something minute. I think that's wherein is their issues. They're coming a bit like Ireland, I think, in that 2019, you know, where they got to a pitch and were doing really, really well. And then don't evolve with the game the way the game has evolved, if that makes any sense. And their discipline has been appalling. And, you know, that's got to be a player and a coach responsibility, I think. And as I was talking to JP earlier on about it. And for me, you know, Mario Tauge giving those five or six penalties away, he obviously got spoken to the following Monday review or whatever. He wasn't the same player for the last few games because he was almost like, oh my God, if you give away more penalties, you're going to be dropped. And then it takes away his edge. He was non-existent for the last two games for the most part. Mm. So there's a lot of issues in that England squad. I think when you look at the likes of Marcus Smith, Sam Simmons, Joe Simmons, and like Ollie Lawrence was playing brilliant rugby for Bath and then gets selected to play for England. And they don't even use him the way he should be used. And it's always, I was only chatting to one of the lads at the weekend. I feel with England and Eddie Jones, he brings in these new players. And if things aren't going right, not necessarily to do with that new player, they're the first ones hauled off all the time or not selected. He always goes back to that tried and tested, the Elliot Dalys, the Owen Farrells, George Fords. Like, there has to come a time where if they're not in form, then they get dropped. Hmm. What then does that do for the rest of the squad? Oh, like, we thought he was undroppable. He's not. So then that puts fire up everybody else and makes them play better, if that makes any sense. There's almost a case of, well, we know all the Saracens boys, or we know the first 10 that's going to be on the team sheet type of thing.
Yeah.
Because it's the way he's always played.
Yeah. I mean, he generally goes with six Saracen starters. I think when Daly was dropped, it was down to five. But that's a third of the team. And what will be very interesting, you'd love to be a fly in the wall in this review, which is upcoming, is Eddie just turning around and saying, look, lads, this Saracen thing's a mess. You know, none of them were fit. That's a third of my team. So, look, this is just a bad Six Nations. Let's call it the Saracens' consequence. And it'll be fine come next year. You wonder, will that wash? You wonder, is that the way he's thinking? Because if it's not the way he's thinking any now, then he's looking at a complete rebuild job.
Yeah, I think what's to say that those, you know, are Saracens going to come up for definite? Like, you might think that they are with all this money, but they've been beaten twice already in the championship. So, you know, is it an automatic thing that they come up?
Maybe not.
Also, the fact
maybe they all get out of town if they don't get up. Maybe they're like, look, yeah, I'll do 1 year. Doing two.
Yeah, well, they'll have to. You could see the likes of McAvoy, Billy Vanapola, Owen Farrell. I thought they were all really, really poor for the majority of that tournament. And it's also a case of they're not playing. You know, what does it do for the for the squad morale is what I've been thinking. You know, they're not playing. They don't play week in, week out. Now they effectively go back to Saracens and play championship rugby. Is that how it works for the next couple of months or whatever? And then you've the likes of these, you know, Henry Slade, Ollie Lawrence, you know, these guys that are playing week in, week out and playing really good rugby with really good teams and with guys that should be there and thereabouts. Like, Sam Simmons has scored the most tries in the Premiership for the last two seasons, I'm pretty sure. And, he, you know, a number eight, big guy that can run physically, but also can offload and kind of give them a different dimension. And yet, you know, it's almost a case with Eddie that he's just got stubborn or something, because people are calling for all these players to be brought in and he just doesn't want to know about them. So I think they have a lot of issues, and it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that review.
Yeah, for sure. And Ellis Genge even saying he couldn't wait to get away from the bloody place. You know, it wasn't that much fun. I wouldn't say Eddie Jones's camp is that much fun. And you know, another thing, and like, you can't shed any light on this, I can't shed any light on this, but it's interesting when you're talking about just the balance in the camp. When you stop and think about it, there will be players in that English camp or on the fringes who look at the Saracens boys and still think, you lads cheated. You've robbed so-and-so out of a medal here. You know, like, I know they'll come out and they say they had a meeting and they cleared the air when it all happened, but I, you know, guarantee you, there's got to be a couple in there saying, yeah, look, I'm you know, I'm going to have a coffee with you and we'll get on and everything, but it can't be great for team spirit either. It might be 10 years before we get the truth about how everybody feels about that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, I'm sure a lot of those extra boys, especially because they feel like that they've had a lot of players that should be in that squad and aren't in there. You know, the Simmons brothers obviously being case in point, and they're also the ones that lost out for them for a couple of years. But look, it's hard to know. I think
it is.
You know, to be fair to those Saracens boys, they weren't the ones making the decisions at board level. So they were just going out and playing. And, you know, so, like, if you're Owen Farrell or Mario Tauge or whoever, like, do you turn around and say, listen, like, no, that's not right? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's they're playing. Like, Do you know what I mean? They're players, effectively. And whatever happens behind the scenes, it's very difficult to try and, or to kind of blame a player for that, I think. Yeah. I think it was just a poorly managed situation by the club, as opposed to the players.
Yeah, I think you're right. And ultimately, if I was, you know, if we were to get the reasons, I suspect it might be, you know, 1% of a reason out of 99 others before it, you know. But it's just, it's all part of this Saracens thing. Which has affected them. So where does that leave us as we kind of sign off and head towards the sunset then to South Africa, which I think is good. In terms of Irish lines, starters, I'm seeing various teams around the place over the last couple of days. I saw Donal Lennon, Eddie O'Sullivan and Bernard Jackman picked a team in against the Head, and they wangled in four Irish players. They had Tadhg Byrne in, they had Johnny Sexton in, they had Robbie Henshaw in, and they had Tadhg Furlong in. So they had four in the starting lineup. So no James Ryan, no Conor Murray. I guess I don't know who else you might stick in. What's your thinking on the lines as things stand?
Like as a squad or as a starting test?
I'm kind of more interested in starting test. Then I might throw, you know, any squad members, I guess.
I think Tadhg Furlong is 100% nailed on.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's so far ahead of everybody else. And what he's done, I suppose, having been out for a year, is probably even more reason to think that he's nailed on, because he's only going to get better and better as the next couple of months go by with more game time. I think, for me, Johnny Sexton is definitely in there too. I think...
Which, by the way, is kind of amazing, isn't it? I think at the start of the championship, Finn Russell, George Ford, just by dint of age and everything else, were licking their lips saying, well, Sexton's out of the equation here. I mean, he hasn't finished 80 minutes in a long time, certainly not consecutively. And what is he, the 10 of the championship?
Yeah, for me, he is now. I've seen a couple of articles about Dan Biggar. And to be fair, Dan Biggar never does anything wrong. And he's, you know, he's incredibly astute as a rugby player, very good technical mind. There's just something lacking for me in terms of, like, Johnny's grumpy. He can drive people. He gets the best out of those around him. Mm. And that's not to say I don't know Dan Biggar, but from watching, you know, he just seems like, you know, he came off nearly every game for Wales at 50 minutes.
Yeah, that's always a bit odd, isn't it? Callum Sheedy finishes.
Completely sorry for cutting across here. Yeah. I actually think he's the reason, taking him off so early in the last game, in the French game, was the reason they lost. I thought they lost all control after he went off. I was really surprised at that. Robbie Henshaw, for me, and I don't think the form that Conor Murray showed last week has catapulted him straight back into that conversation. Mm. I thought he was excellent, and I would like to think that the more he'll play now over the next couple of weeks, the sharper he'll get again. And I thought he was really good. Mm. The fairy tale in me would love to see Keith Earls in there.
It's interesting. The boys I mentioned, Donal Lennon, Eddie O'Sullivan, Bernard Jackman, I should have given you their team to kind of give you a sense of what they were thinking. In their backline, they had Gareth Davies in instead of Murray. They had Sexton. And they had Owen Farrell and Henshaw together. And then on the wings, they had Liam Williams and Rhys Samet with Stuart Hogg at fullback.
Yeah, I saw that. And to be fair, it's an unbelievable backline. I am going to be a little bit controversial here. I actually wouldn't have Owen Farrell in there.
Right.
I would start Robbie Henshaw at 12. And I would love to see Keith Earls in there. I think he's playing better rugby than he was 4 years ago, which is outrageous when you think about it. Mm. He went on a Lions tour 8 years ago, is it now?
No, so, oh nine, it'd be 12.
Oh nine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh my God.
This will be the full, that was in South Africa, so this would be a certain symmetry to it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think he's playing brilliant rugby. Now, that's just the fairy tale of me. And I'm not sure, because there is some unbelievable wingers there. I think Rhys Samet's, you know, come burst onto the scene, but then you've like George North as well and Anthony Watson,
Liam Williams,
and these guys,
Liam Williams in as well,
and Stuart Hogg has got to be nailed down as 15, like you know, I think that's going to be a given.
Would you be worried about Gary Ringrose now, because I think maybe towards the end of last year a lot of people would have felt, well, you know, such a brilliant defender and reader of the game and touch of class, that he'd have a very good chance of being in there, but the Six Nations hasn't gone his way, so I don't know how he flips that.
Yeah, I think, well, look, it's similar to 4 years ago when Peter O'Mahony hadn't played well or played at all because he'd been injured and came in for, was it 4 years ago where he came in for the last Six Nations game and all of a sudden, you know, captain for the first test. I think Ringrose 100% has a chance. I actually think for the first couple of games, he was doing his best to drag us through some really sticky situations. Mm. Okay, the last game that he played, Italy, I think it was, Scotland didn't go too well for him. Mm. But other than that, he had probably been the form, you know, centre for the previous 12 months. But it's funny, you know, the way the lines work, usually kind of only, it's not really the year before that they usually take on into account. It seems to be the Six Nations and the run-in. And, you know, traditionally you'd have Six Nations and then you'd have European Cup. And it used to be kind of, I felt like it used to be based off that almost. So it'll be interesting. And, you know, it'd be a bit unfair for him not to be. But I think Henry Sayed's played really well.
You forget Gatland. I mean, I know this is Niamh Briggs' team as opposed to what we think Gatland will do. But Gatland loves Jonathan Davies.
Yeah, and he's class. Mm. But is he playing as well as he has been? Is he carrying injuries? You know, but then he's really good at doing the basics really well. He never makes a mistake. His ability to cover across the line, you know, is similar to Robbie Henshaw's, to be fair to him. Mm. So, yeah, Jonathan Davies will probably be in there. And I really, really like Hugh Jones from Scotland. I think he and it's a bit left field, I get it, but I think he causes huge amount of problems staying the teams. And I was a bit surprised to see him not starting this weekend that Chris Harris was back in for France. So, look, it's... I suppose this is like we've just left one tournament and now we're all so excited about the Lions and we can just argue about this for the next few weeks. I just think I on the plane or in a whole test squad, I'd love to see six or seven names in there. I think it would definitely be warranted.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, like Ian Henderson, like it's very difficult to not look at that.
Well, you think, I mean, he will certainly go. It's okay because he really emerges a brilliant player for the midweek team. I think there was a game, he arrived, he was unlucky. He was part of a batch that played kind of jet lagged and when they first arrived in New Zealand and had to fight his way back from memory. And I think Sexton was in the same boat for a while, but then injuries meant he kind of played himself into form. So if that was kind of your back line, you're having Furlong in the front row. The Lenihan, O'Sullivan, Jackman team had Itoje and Alan Wynn in the second row. They did have Tadhg Byrne at six. So is it Itoje and Alan Wynn for you in the second row?
No, I think it could be... You see, I'm not sure Alan Wynn will start. As much as I love him, he's one of my favourite players. Yeah. I just think... I think... For me, you know, his performances not really dipped, but I thought, you know, against France the last day, I thought, you know, he was looking out to be Simbin. You know, a lot of penalties, thought it was a lot of penalties. Look, his work rate's unbelievable. And if they were going to pick a tour captain and a test captain, I think Alwyn would be the perfect tour captain. I think, you know, his record is unbelievable. I think it could be Itoje and James Ryan. In second row or Itoje, James Ryan. I think Itoje has to start as much as when we play against him drives me insane because he's such on the edge. But when I'm supporting him, I love the fact that he's on the edge. And they're going to need somebody like that with a bit of dog in them against South Africa. That's going to be a big thing.
It's amazing. It seems like Tadhg Byrne really has gone from not sure would he play for Ireland to now being a line starter in a lot of people's eyes.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. And, you know, there's a lot, you know, people question his size, I think, a lot. And for me, you know, I think the game is starting to evolve away from these big, heavy second rows to a certain point. I think when you look at the likes of New Zealand and Sam Whitelock and Scott Barrett and these guys, that they're not huge. But what they do, they have finesse about them and their ability to link play but also their ability to match a line out, which, you know, Tadhg Byrne has been really good at. And if he plays in the second row, he gives that option of almost having a fourth back row. And I think if you go with a big kind of front row like a Tadhg Byrne, probably Matt Guvenepoel or Sinclair type of a player, you know, they're big enough to kind of take the weight in the scrum, I think. Now the girls are probably roaring laughing at me talking about a scrum, but I think he's too important. He's way too crafty. His ability to get over the ball, but his ability to put himself into positions, he's really clever. I was watching the other day when I watched the game back at picking his moments. You know, there are the times when you could jump into nearly every rock and come away with nothing, whereas he's happy enough to kind of follow the play behind and just wait for his little opportunity. Yeah. And the minute he gets it, he doesn't leave a go. And so, yeah, look, for me, he has to go. I don't think you can deny that kind of good form.
Mm. And Johnny Sexton, needless to say, would be the oldest starting 10 on the Lions tour by some distance. God, if ever a conversation warranted being in a pub with pints around the table and crisp packets open everywhere, it's who should start for the Lions.
Absolutely.
So just to round off the chat then, France and Scotland is now not a dead rubber as a result of the French miracle late on Saturday night. They need to beat the Scots by 21 points and score 4 tries in doing so. I mean, if they're going to beat them by 21 points, they're going to score the 4 tries, I think. Scots disappointing, obviously, post Twickenham against Wales and against Ireland. So, like, they have a lot to play for here, Scotland. And they know there'll be a lot of eyeballs on this game. I mean, initially in the euphoria after France performed the miracle against Wales, you thought, my God, anything's possible. 21-point victory against the Scots, they'll do it. They'll, you know, there's destiny about this. The more I think about this game, like, 21 points is a whopping. I mean, Scotland are not going to lose this game by 21 points, are they?
I can't see it. I really can't. I think, and to be fair to Gregor Townsend, he's gone all in. Like, that's the strongest possible team he could have selected, albeit, you know, Sean Maitland was not released from his club and Johnny Gray's injured. Like, that's it then. Mm. Like, you know, so, and they'll definitely leave. For them, I think this tournament will probably be a little bit disappointing given how they started it. And, you know, if it's going to be so important for them going into their next phase or next evolution that they finish on something of a high. Mm. I think France, I can't even begin to describe how they won that match the other day. I actually think Wales lost it as opposed to France winning it.
Okay.
And their discipline was appalling. I think the COVID break has broken French momentum. And I don't think Scotland will be as cynical or as probably like silly. There were silly penalties that Wales gave away, silly penalties. I don't think that'll happen for Scotland. So I do think France will win. I just don't think they'll win by 21 points.
Yeah, it's a tall order. Our rugby coverage here on Off the Ball is with thanks to Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish team of us, everyone in. We're talking to Niamh Briggs. Before you go, there is the small matter of Leinster Munster in a Pro 14 final, 5 o'clock, kickoff on Saturday. It's on Air Sport. I mean, the interesting thing here is to what extent this match will be prioritised for both sides. Leinster have the bigger squad, I suppose, but for Munster, they have to balance the desperation to win a first trophy in what will be 10 years, effectively, 2011, their last win. It was a Magners League as it was then. Basically, you're asking a lot of players to have played against Scotland and then England, and then a Pro 14 final, and then they have Toulouse a week later, and then they'll have, hopefully from their point of view, a European Cup quarter-final against Wasps or Clermont the week after that. In effect, you're saying 5 weeks. 5 weeks on the bounce for the likes of Stander, for the likes of Keith Earls. I think Kilcoyne's HIA rules him out. For Conor Murray, you're saying 4 weeks on the bounce because obviously he was injured and unused against Scotland. So the word from Van Grand seems to be we're going all out this Saturday. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the team, so we'll worry about, you know, next week and the week after when they arrive. But there seems to be a sense with Munster in particular, winning a trophy is the priority. Do you think that's the right thing to do, or could they live to really regret this if they're dumped out of Europe because they're all wrecked by week five?
No, I think they've got to go for it. I think the piece of silverware, the trophy that they're craving, is probably a little bit more important to them in the now than what's coming down the road. I think for Billy Holland and for CJ Sander, I think for them to go out with, you know, something tangible that they've won will be huge for them as a squad. I think the big thing, you know, for Munster now is that over the last few weeks they've been able to give you know, all these young guys, you know, loads of game time, which has been brilliant. And so now you can start, you know, a Keith Earls, Stander on the bench and unload them if you have to. And therefore, you're reducing some of the load. Mm. I think, you know, that's down the line, I think, for this Saturday. And look, I've been there. You come away off a good Six Nations win like you did against England. You're only buzzing to get back playing.
Sure,
and
yeah.
If you get back playing and it's a final and it's against Leinster, you're walking into Pangran on Monday morning and you're saying, yeah, I'm good to go. I really want to play this game. I think Toulouse is going to be a tall order anyway, because, you know, just because they're playing really well this season and they've so many stars across the pitch, but they also have the part as well where their French players are playing this weekend with France, so they're going to be in a similar boat in terms of the likes of Dupont and Entemac and these guys. They're playing against Scotland Friday, and then the following weekend they're playing Munster, so it's going to be something similar for them too. So
yeah,
I think
point.
That's going to be a week by week case. I think it'll be how fresh they feel. I think you know, the likes of Jack O'Donoghue, Craig Casey, Calvin Nash, Shane Daly, Mike Cayley, these guys have all been playing really, really well. And so, you know, you have to get them confidence too. So it doesn't, you know, automatically mean that the lads will, you know, they'll probably start this weekend, but you've got to trust them too in big games, those younger guys. And so I think Munster finally got into a position where they now have that little bit of strength and depth, that if the likes of O'Mahony or Sander isn't starting against Toulouse, well, they're not really losing out in a huge amount, because what's there is pushing them. And as for Leinster, like, look, it's a conveyor belt of absolute unbelievable talent.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to think that Johnny comes back to 10 and Ross Byrne and Harry Byrne are playing, and that if Robbie goes back to 12, then, you know, Kieran Frawley, who I absolutely love, and Rory Loughlin, who I think is class, aren't going to be in there either. So they've, you know, an unbelievable embarrassment for Riches in terms of, and they've managed it really well in terms of nobody will be undercooked. Do you know what I mean? Like, Leinster have managed their international players being away and getting guys game time really, really well. So it's really exciting. I can't wait. And I just, you know, the old romantic in me would love to see a Munster win just for the two guys. But, you know, Leinster are just really strong too, and a home game for them. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Leinster have Toulon in the last 16 match, and then it'll be Exeter or Leon in the quarterfinal. So again, look, similar boat. Tyke Furlong, Keane Healy, Johnny Sexton, Robbie Henshaw, Hugo Keenan, all. You'd be asking them to go 5 weeks on the bounce. Out for Leinster, James Ryan's out, Will Connors is out, Gary Ringrose is out with his ankle, Caelan Doris still unavailable, Dan Levy is unavailable as well. So that's where we are. And that's before we introduce, you know, I mean, kind of tantalising to think of Joey Carberry starting. He was rested at the weekend for the Benetton game, and you know, you kind of think back to the 13-10 game at Thomond in January, where they were mainly fully loaded. Like, Munster were really close that day. Leinster scored a sucker try late on. JJ Hanrahan missed two kicks. So, like, there's a definite sense Munster are closing in. I'm hearing quite a few people tipped to win this weekend. I know it's kind of hard to do that before you see the teams. But there's definitely a sense this is a really good chance for them. I get the impression you're thinking along those lines too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important for them to go and try and win. I think it's going to be important. I think it's going to be more important for Munster to break that duck.
Yeah.
Almost, this is going to sound really bad than it will be for Leinster, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, Leinster have won it 3 years in a row, so, you know.
Yeah, and they're, you know, to be fair to Munster, Leinster are further along in their development and will be, in my opinion, will be pushing for European honours. You know, I think Munster is still a little bit behind that, so yeah, like, I think from that perspective, I think it's really important. I do think I remember working for that game in January and speaking to the lads afterwards. A few of them, you know, they were really disappointed with how that game went, the Munster boys. You know, they really felt like they'd left that behind them. So for me then, that just showed me that there was a different set mentality, a different mindset. You know, they felt like they belonged at that level. And I think that was a big shift, because for previous few seasons, I think when Munster played Leinster, they didn't really, really believe that they could win it, if that makes sense. Whereas now I think that they do. And I think Steve Larkham's bedded in really well, the type of rugby that they're trying to play, or, you know, moving that point of contact is really good. I think Graham Rowntree's added a lot of value to them and their set piece. So, yeah, look, I think they can go up there with loads of confidence. But, you know, Leinster know how to win. That's the big difference. They've they know how to win. They're able to eke out wins and go and find wins when, a bit like France the other day, when things might not be going your way. So from that perspective, Munster, when they have their foot in the throat, they're going to have to go full throttle and they don't have to be rootless. They can't leave any points behind them because Leinster are just too good.
Yeah, it's that simple, really. Niamh Briggs, brilliant stuff. Thanks so much, Niamh. Talk to you again.
Thanks, Mill. Thanks a million.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.